Okay, I have five after, Dr. Tudor.
All right. All right. Welcome, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. And so I'll call the December 13th, 2022 Medical Advisory Committee meeting to order. Thanks for spending part of your afternoon with us today, and hope everyone's having just an exceptional holiday season so far. We'll jump into introductions. I think we'll just look at electronically, correct?
Well, we need some introductions. I need to know who's on the telephone.
Who's on the phone?
7590220.
It's Alex O'Neill with Arbicare.
Thank you. 615-347-1189.
That's V Story with Zurich Insurance Company.
Well, welcome. Glad to see
Thank you.
We're glad to hear from you. 901-603.
John Brophy, Memphis.
Okay. Good to hear from you. And so, I think, well, let's just run down the list. Okay. Amanda.
Hi.
Okay. Amy Moses.
Good afternoon.
The Key Foods. Judy Bobbitt.
Hi, all. Merry Christmas.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
TOA. Brian Allen. Carla Townsend.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Tudor. Dr. Cole.
Cole's here.
Okay. Dr. Kaiser.
Here.
Okay. Ginny Howard.
Hello.
Welcome in your new role.
Thank you.
Dr. Talmadge. Dr. Hazelwood. Okay.
Here, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Dr. Benitez, welcome. Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm back again. I'm not sure, we got a new commissioner coming in January, so we'll see what happens then.
Mr. Brinton.
Hey, Dr. Snyder, how are you?
Good. Dr. Bellner?
Good afternoon, everyone.
And Lisa Hartman.
Hello, everyone.
Dr. Cummings is here with me. She just wanted to get out of the office and come see us.
Hi, Dr. Snyder. It's Rob Banky. I'm here too today.
Okay, good. Welcome. I have 10 committee members present. That Mark or
there's more than enough for a quorum. I think there may be more than 10 committee members. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I've got 12 committee members by my count, Dr. Snyder.
Okay.
Dr. Snyder, Brian Allen put in the messages that he's not sure that you got him, but he's here.
Yep. Okay. Thank you.
And Dr. Cummings makes, I believe, 13.
I counted her as 12. She would be 12.
Oh, 12. Okay.
I believe the two that are missing are Dr. Hedrick and Ms. Williams, Misty Williams.
And V Story.
V Story is on the phone.
Oh, she was. I'm sorry. I didn't hear her. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
I didn't count Ginny and V. Okay, great. Good. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate everybody taking the time. Dr. Tudor?
Yeah, so do we have 14 members or 16 members now? 14?
We have 16 members, of which 14 are present today.
Okay, so 14 are present. Okay, yeah, more than a quorum. All right, let's move ahead. So next agenda item is approval of minutes from the September 20th meeting. Those were sent out last week. Hope everyone's had a chance to review them. Any comments, corrections, dissents?
This is Rick Cole. I move to adopt the minutes as presented.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Cole. Do we have a second? To accept the minutes or approve the minutes?
I'll second the motion.
Thank you. So we have first and second. Any opposed? No? So we'll note
who
that
was
the...
That? Yeah, who was that? That
that was Jenny Howard.
Jenny? Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right. So we'll note that the September 20th, 2022 minutes were approved and accepted. So next item, conflict of interest forms. Susie, how are we doing with conflict of interest forms?
We are doing great. We are missing one, but that individual's not here today.
Okay. Okay. Well, we don't have to fuss at anyone then. That's good. All right. So we'll move on to old business. I think that kind of takes care of our busy work. So old business, the ODG update from December of 2022, looks like opioids.
So this, all of the ODG updates had to do with the drug formulary at this time. There was none in the treatment guidelines, so it was just the drug formulary. There were a number of changes under miscellaneous in the first three. The three had to do with changes in whether or not they were required prior approval. And so all three of those were moved into the prior approval. So it was the that was the new entry. Things that are substantial changes were under the buprenorphine. They added some extra requirements for conditional recommendations for the buprenorphine for the two, the Suboxone, the sublingual tablets for use disorder and also pain treatment. And so that was changed from and added to for the conditional approval. Two other things to note were the methadone changes. Those are no longer recommended for the discettes. Otherwise, most everything else was an updated entry or a deletion. In other words, moving other medications into other categories. So I recommend that we accept ODG changes.
Just out of curiosity, why is propoxyphene still on here?
This is used outside the United States.
Oh, okay. 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 All right. Any other comments, questions, input? If not, we'll accept a motion to accept the or approve the updates.
Also move. This is John Benitez.
Thank you, Dr. Benitez. Do we have a second?
Second.
Very good. Thanks, Dr. Kaiser. Any opposed? Very good. We'll note that we've approved the ODG December 2022 updates. We'll move on to our next item, which is medical fee schedule and Medicare update.
So as of this date, Medicare has recommended a 3% reduction in their conversion factor. that obviously is always subject to change once Congress gets back in January or February. But as of this date, it will drop to $34.06 from $35. So that will affect our fee schedule a little bit. We have completed the public hearing for the medical fee schedule updates. The comments have been received and are being processed by the Bureau at this time. The biggest change recommended in the fee schedule is an increase in certain subspecialties, including neurology, cardiology, psychiatry, and I think there's one other one. I'm blocking on it right now. There's also an increase for psychologists and there's
pulmonology,
also,
I think.
Yeah, pulmonology was the other one. Okay, thank you, Susie. The other change is that we have partnered with Fair Health to provide the instead of allowing everyone to calculate, we're Fair Health is going to provide us with rate tables in a downloadable format. And that will be free to all users once that's approved. It still has to go through the Attorney General's office, and it has to go through some the Government Operations Committee. So we're hopeful sometime in 2023 that we will be able to use rate tables rather than have everybody do their own calculations. Any questions or comments on that so far?
I think free rate tables are the best thing that we can do for providers. So that's going to be a much anticipated and welcomed addition to the program.
We hope so.
I agree.
Yeah. They always, everyone seems to calculate it just a little bit differently. So it'll be good to have one standard source. All right. Any other comments or questions regarding fee schedule? If not, we'll move on to our rules and legislative update. And Amanda, do you have that for us today?
We are still working on the rules for 17, 18, and 19, and hopefully we're going to have the changes done shortly. No legislative update at the moment unless Troy may know of something that I do not. So that's all I got.
No, nothing. Very good. Nothing to report yet. Once January gets here, I'm sure we'll have plenty of news to talk about. But the rules for medical payments, medical fee schedule, and the inpatient hospital fee schedule, I'm working on that right now, doing the final review and edits. And hopefully by the end of the week, we will have that ready to send over to the Attorney General's office.
What is the time frame for after it goes through the AG's office?
Yeah, that's usually the time delay is usually at the AG's office. They're really busy there with, you know, litigation, and we try to get the rules approved as quickly as possible. Sometimes it's a matter of weeks. Sometimes it's a matter of months. Once we get the signed final version back from the Attorney General, we will file that on the same day with the Secretary of State's office. And the effective date of the rules is exactly 90 days from the day we file the final version with the Secretary of State, pending approval by the Joint Government Operations Committee at their regular monthly rule review before that 90-day period passes.
Very good. Thanks. All right. So I guess we'll move on to our next agenda item, just flying right through here, utilization review.
The new utilization review rules, which are posted on our website, were effective September the 29th of this year. The notable changes at that time were the allowing the extra day that was allowed for the adjusters to approve a procedure, a treatment, or to send it to utilization review went from 3 days to 4 days. This was to allow them a little bit of extra time. But in concert with that, that also means that we are going to monitor that a little bit more closely than we have in the past. It is time intensive and labor intensive to follow up on some of these reports, but we're going to do the best we can to hold the utilization review companies and the adjusters to timelines. So just be aware that once the utilization or that once the adjuster receives both the note, the medical note, and the request for treatment or request for medication, that's when the timeline starts. So it's not when they specifically receive the just the treatment. They have to receive also the medical note. But we are also going to monitor that as closely as we can. Then the other change is that the utilization review organizations are required to give us annual reports that include the numbers of utilization reviews that they do and the results, as well as the physicians involved in those in their utilization reviews. So those reports will be due. We'll see what we get for January of 2023, but we'll see then about organizing those reports and giving them to the Medical Advisory Committee. So that's all I have on UR at this time.
All right. Very good. Very good. Any questions for Dr. Snyder or comments from the group? If not, we'll move on to our formal presentations today regarding the reward program.
We have two others. Oh, what? The reward program is not a presentation, but it is from Susie, an update.
Okay.
Yes, I just want to invite anyone who's interested to attend the Employer Reward Group support meeting that will be February 22nd at 9:30. Dr. Les Curte will be speaking. He is a clinical psychologist and will be talking about return to work issues. So anyone interested can contact me and I will send you an invitation to that meeting. We are also starting the next session of the return to work coordinator training for anyone interested. That will roll out, I believe, the end of January, 1st of February in 2023. So you can contact us if you're interested in getting on that list or a waiting list for that coming up. Thank you.
Thanks, Susie. And so I guess certified physician program.
So new applications to the certified physician program have been placed on hold. We are awaiting further evaluation from the Attorney General's office with some legislative changes. Those individuals that have already enrolled or have received or started the certified physician program may go ahead and complete the modules and the educational sessions, and they will receive the CMEs for that, the continuing medical education credits for that program. But new applications are on hold until we get some further action.
What's the story with that?
There was a question about the whether or not the Bureau had the authority to create a separate category of physicians. So yeah. It had to do with legislative or statutory authority for creating a separate group of or separating a group into a new group.
Yeah, I've had some correspondence back and forth with the Attorney General's office, and they are going to require us to have statutory authority to promulgate those certified physician program rules for the reason Dr. Snyder just mentioned. So we've added that to our administration bill. We have not gotten a thumbs up on that, but even if we don't, we'll get it. We'll get it introduced through other means. We've got some other resources available to do that. It's really just a matter of time. It's not a matter of if it's going to happen. It's just the time factor involved having to go through the legislative process over the winter months. But we appreciate everybody's patience. It's going to be a great thing. It's just one of those legal situations that we've got to get the statutory authority passed.
All right. Any other questions about those topics? If not, we'll move ahead with COVID update.
On December the 8th, NIOSH, the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, had a webinar that presented the New York State data from COVID. If you're interested in that report, either send a request to me or to Susie, and I can provide that report to you, the slideshow for it. What was interesting is that the New York State experience mirrored a lot of what we have seen. During 2021, 6% of their overall claims were related to COVID. That is all of workers' compensation claims. And it was interesting that the highest percentage of those claims came from first responders and not from healthcare workers. Their rate of denials of claims was about the same as ours, being someplace about 60 to 65%. And interestingly enough, of those accepted claims, only 25% ever received any awards, that is either medical payments or lost time from work. And only 10% of their death claims actually received benefits. For our numbers, we have only about 15% of individuals that have accepted claims that actually get some payments. And we have approximately 20% of our death claims that receive death benefits. So we have a few different numbers, but it's interesting that the numbers from New York and those from Tennessee are pretty close as far as their experience with denied claims and payments. Two other things concerning COVID. The first being is that most jurisdictions are seeing a very limited amount of litigation or hearings concerning COVID. We have had no judicial decisions on hearings related to COVID, which is interesting. You would think that there would have been at least some disputes involving COVID, but most of the claims that come through mediation are actually settled at mediation, either that or withdrawn. And so we've had virtually no court cases involved with COVID. What is still of concern for the industry itself is a worry over the liability for cases of long COVID or those for post-acute sequelae of COVID, the long COVID cases. The industry is worried about the potential exposure to those cases. But if you look at their past experience, very few workers' compensation cases have gone to long-term payments. The NCCI had only documented, I believe it was either 4 or 5 cases of COVID where the medical expenses were over $1 million. And that had to do with individuals that ended up in the ICU and then had long-term consequences for that. But for the number of claims that have been accepted, it's the average, I think they said the average medical expenses were someplace in the neighborhood of $4,000 per claim. So the expenses have not borne out with the risks or potential risks so far, but it is a worry for the industry itself. We're seeing very, very few new COVID claims come in now.
So will how COVID has been handled, is there any expectation that that may change? And I think we talked about it before, maybe how influenza is handled or other potential in infectious illnesses that could have complications.
Tennessee is one of the few states that does have a presumption for infectious diseases if they meet certain pretty stringent requirements. And so it's possible that we could get a flu claim or an RSV claim. But there are pretty stringent requirements about how it has to be reported and under what time frames.
I guess we haven't seen any of those.
I haven't heard of any.
We haven't
particularly looked for them. But just that the number of claims that come in with any infectious disease are really very, very low.
All right. Good. Any comments, questions regarding COVID or any of the old business today? If not, we'll move on to new business, which I think maybe is a formal presentation.
Yes, it is. And so I welcome any input from anybody at the Bureau that wants to chime in on this presentation. So I'm not a professional at this, but I'm going to try to share my screen. And tell me if you see it.
Not yet.
So tell me what you see. Do you see the 7 offices or do you see the Bureau programs?
The Bureau programs.
Okay, great. Okay. So okay, this is an overview. I welcome any input from any of the other staff members that are present on this call. This is just an overview of what we do here at the Bureau. The Bureau has 7 offices, one in Gray, which is in Tri-Cities, Knoxville, Chattanooga, Murfreesboro, Nashville, Jackson, and Memphis. We have approximately 160 employees, including 12 Court of Workers' Compensation judges and 3 Appeals Board judges. We're proud that for 3 years in a row that we have been accepted as a top workplace. And our administrator is Troy Haley, and our assistant administrator is Jeff Francis. So we have many programs within the Bureau, and so I'm going to divide them up into about six categories. The first one is administration. So all claims that are filed in the state of Tennessee then are tracked by the Bureau with electronic forms. The claims then include payments and the other aspects that the adjusters and interactions with the injured workers, proof of coverage. Companies that are required to have workers' compensation coverage in the state of Tennessee are also tracked. We have Amanda heads up the legislative and legal services, which includes all the advice that we get concerning statutes and rules, and also includes the penalty program for violations of the statutes or our rules. And then also under administration is our information systems and communications. Mediation Ombudsman Services of Tennessee, MOST program, includes the mediation services for any appeal to the from a petition for benefits determination, which is a dispute that can be filed, then goes to mediation in the state. Then before it goes to the court, then the mediators will certify what's called a dispute certification notice, which will identify the issues that have not been resolved, and only those can be taken to the court. Also in the MOST program are the ombudsman contact information services. They handle well over 3,000 calls a month to handle information and also requests from all parties. And then we have ombudsman attorneys, and those attorneys can give legal help injured workers who do not have an attorney with filing of forms and other activities in pursuing their case in the court. The compliance program includes the Uninsured Employer Fund, which is exactly what it says. This is a fund specifically for injured workers whose employers should have been insured, but avoided getting insurance, and consequently, these injured workers then would not have any coverage, and that's what this fund is designed to help with. And then the Employee Misclassification Education Enforcement Fund, which is a big long name. This actually is employers who are tracked, who have misclassified employees either by their not applying all of their payroll that they should for classification purposes, or by eliminating employees by calling them independent contractors. So this fund and also compliance this creates penalties for uninsured employers, but also employers that misclassify employees or don't report their proper payrolls. And then finally, the compliance program has taken over the exemption registry and is in the process of operationalizing that registry for employers that request exemptions. We have ancillary services, which fall outside of some of these other categories, the first one being the Drug-Free Workplace Program, which provides education and advice and information and training programs for employers within the state that want to keep a safe workplace. The subsequent injury fund then is for injured workers who have a subsequent injury after a settlement. And this fund is designed then to cover the employers who would otherwise be liable for the total injury, and this separates them into a separate fund. The Next Step program is a scholarship program for injured workers who cannot go back to their previous occupation and would like to go on to further either manual training or to educational opportunities, including college programs two-year programs or other training programs in the state. And then finally, the reward program is our program to help employers and injured workers get back to work and to provide communications with physicians to encourage returning employees to work under limited duty if possible, and also to encourage communications. Under the medical unit, as we've discussed earlier, the fee schedule, we're responsible for designing and implementing the fee schedule. The medical unit handles utilization review appeals. We also handle the registration, educational requirements, and oversight of case managers in the state of Tennessee. The Medical Impairment Rating Registry is an administrative program to settle disputes concerning permanent impairment ratings that differ. We also handle waivers for the medical fee schedule should an individual worker not be able to find adequate quality providers, either out of state if they're domiciled out of state or in state for certain subspecialties. The Medical Payment Committee is the administrative process of resolving disputes between the providers and the payers. And then finally, the Medical Advisory Committee, all of you, that we appreciate your input and your participation in advising the administrator on things that are important to the stakeholders in the Bureau. And then we have our customers that we serve, and this includes everyone that comes in contact with the Bureau, injured workers, employers and insurers, other employees, attorneys and providers. Our job is to answer their questions as competently and quickly as possible, and also be as transparent about the certain rules and regulations that we have to follow. The Bureau is involved in many educational programs, including the Physician Education Conference, the Bureau's annual education conference, all the educational possibilities within the website itself, the adjuster training and certification programs, and then other presentations. The Bureau has always welcomed questions and ideas from the outside, and we are available to present to different constituents, whether it be providers or whether it be attorneys or employers. Or insurers to outline the programs and the activities that we do. So the mission of the Bureau is fulfilling the promise of workers' compensation today and tomorrow, and that's our Bureau programs. So thank you for putting up with this, and I Would entertain any questions or comments.
Regarding, I'm not real familiar with the Next Step program. Can you tell us, I don't know if that's going to be redundant for everybody else or not, but I really have almost no familiarity with that. I know like the Department of Vocational Rehabilitation exists, and my understanding of that has been that they won't really even talk to anyone until they've completely settled their workers' comp claim. How does Next Step fit in with that?
I'm going to let one of the other people toss in on that.
This is Jim Talmadge.
Yes, Dr. Talmadge is on our advisory committee for that group. So, Dr. Talmadge, take it away.
And this was a program authorized by the legislature where injured workers who aren't back to work at the time they settle their claim have a 90-day window to apply. And if accepted into the program, they're eligible for up to $5,000 a year for up to 4 years for educational expenses to acquire skills for an alternate occupation. So we've approved a number who are going to community college or a formal college to get training to be things, bookkeepers, medical coders, et cetera. And so we have a committee that reviews the applications. The most interesting thing to me is it takes time to go through the training and people want to eat in the meantime. So when they apply, they meet with Marianne White, the head of the program, and she finds them a job. So compared to the number who she finds jobs for, we give scholarships to many fewer. She just gets them back to work, and they're happy, and it doesn't cost the state money to educate them. So it's been a very interesting program, but it does help some people who are paramedics, can't lift patients after a back or shoulder injury, and they become medical coders or whatever, Marion White certainly is a jewel.
And so the Voc Rehab program, you have to be settled, completely settled in your work comp case before you can be referred to that?
Correct. Your work comp case has to settle and have the judge sign off before you're potentially eligible.
And then how do you refer somebody to that?
You just give Marion White's name and phone number or tell them to call the bureau and ask for Marion White, and she'll take it from there.
I'll probably forget that, so I'll have to hound Susie about that sometimes.
We've got a
Susie,
flyer.
Susie, could you send Dr. Kaiser the contact information on Marion?
Yes, sir. I'm on it.
Thank you, Susan.
Rob Bickey's on that too. Rob, have you got any input?
Yeah, I was going to say, Dr. Kaiser, we would love to have more people referred to the program to fill out an application because I don't think, get enough all the time. Not sure why that is, but we would like to see more people apply for it and give us an opportunity to give away more money.
Yeah, I have a fellow, he lost his eye in an industrial accident. He wants to be a barber.
Yeah, that money comes from the subsequent injury fund, second injury fund, and we've got money, plenty of money there. We'd like to, like Rob said, we'd like to have more applicants, but those that we get, a lot of times, Marion, helps them in other ways. And if that works, you know, that's great too, but we do have some money we'd like to spend.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you, Dr. Snyder. Thanks, everyone. Any other comments, questions regarding the Bureau programs or anything else that we've discussed today?
If there's other topics that you would like presentations on, we'll try to arrange them for you.
Thank you. Well, any new announcements today other than I know that Susie and Dr. Snyder are speaking here in Knoxville, I believe in January. Is that correct?
January 20th.
So anyone in East Tennessee should come to the Mid-South Workers' Compensation meeting that day.
We can give you the details if you email us.
And our next meeting will be on March 7th, 2023. So a couple of months down the road. Good deal. Well, if nothing else, I guess we can go ahead and adjourn.
Dr. Benitez asked a question about the formulary, drug formulary. So,
okay.
We just completed, ODG just completed a seminar, a webinar on ODG, and we will be placing that on the website. But we'll go ahead then in March, and I'll put together a presentation for everybody.
Okay.
About
that's
the treatment guidelines and the drug formulary.
Yeah. No, thank you for doing that. Since I've been gone for a while, it's been a while. It'd be a good review for me at the very least, and I'd look at the website for the other. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else? All right. Well, thank you, guys. Hope everyone
hope
has
everybody
a wonderful holidays.
Happy holiday to everybody.
You too.
And thanks so much
thank
for
you.
Your participation.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Right. Yep. Thank you, guys.
Thanks,
Happy New Year.
Happy Hanukkah.
That too.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.